Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 5th of Iyar. Now, I record these shiurim ahead of time, so often I forget to note what day on a calendar it is. The 5th of Iyar, theoretically, would be Yom HaAtzmaut, but today in Eretz Yisrael, on the 5th of Iyar, they're observing Yom HaZikaron, a day of memory of commemorating those who fell, who gave their lives to the establishment of the State of Israel, to the continued health of the State of Israel. Only a couple of years ago, was in Israel for Yom HaZikaron for the first time in a long time, and it's a beautiful time and moments of stopping to note those who made the ultimate sacrifice, or maybe not the ultimate sacrifice, made the sacrifice of their lives for the State of Israel. So we should note that, and it's changed in Israel because the Yom HaZikaron is so important to people that the Rabbanut HaRashit, the Chief Rabbinate, was worried that it would lead to Chilul Shabbat if they had it on Sunday, which is when it would have come this year on Motzei Shabbat. And so therefore, they pushed it off a day. All discussion of its own, but I did not want to let it not be noted today. So this is a responsible day, though written on the 5th of Iyar. It's actually the second of the responsible gets is written on the 5th of Iyar, and that's a much briefer one, but it's the 5th of Iyar of Tavshin Ted of 1949. It's right after the establishment of Israel, and yet Rav Uziel, who is the Sephardi chief rabbi of the State of Israel by this point, when he's writing it, he doesn't say Yom HaTzmaut, he just gives you the date, the 5th of Iyar. So that's a topic of its own. So the first part of the tshuva, or the first tshuva, the first responsum on the topic is from Shut Mishpatei Uziel, Krach Bet, the second volume, the Yeridea section, Simon Samach Gimel, responsum 63. And he says it's about Yeridea Simon Reish Samach Chet, but it brings up an issue, and I confess that I think that I've done a little bit of learning in my life, and I had not, until I came across this tshuva, realized this whole area of discussion that is out there and that he has sources for and that he talks about in the issue. And the issue is, on the first of Nisan of Tavshin Tet, so coming up on Pesach, he gets a letter from the rabbis of, or he's responding to a letter from the rabbis of Istanbul. The rabbis of Istanbul had sent him a letter on the 7th of Adar that there was they call him an Ish mi b'nei Mikra. So I'm pretty sure it means a Karaite. So first off, I'm embarrassed to note that I had always known the name Karaite. I've known the name Karaite for a long time, and I never realized that Karaite came from the fact that they were b'nei Mikra. They were Karaim, meaning Mikra, that they read the Torah, and they rejected Chazal's oral law, the reading of the oral reading of Halacha. And maybe I once upon knew that, but I'd certainly forgotten it for many years, because when I read it now, it was like not a revelation, but it was a surprise to me. So one of these b'nei Mikra, one of these Karaites, wanted to convert. He wanted to join the Jewish people. He came to the rabbis of Istanbul, and he wanted to join fully, as far as they knew. The rabbis of Istanbul knew what I didn't know, which is that there is a long-standing decision, and we're going to see this long-standing, meaning centuries decision, not to accept converts from the B'nai Mikra, from the Karaites. We'll see why. So I'm not going to get into it now. I'm going to give you too much of an introduction. But it's fundamentally the idea of what they rejected, how much they rejected it. The decision was that they had written themselves outside of the Jewish people and would not be taken back into the Jewish people. So let's see what he has to say about it a little bit, and then we'll think about how that affects, or that could theoretically have affected, other issues that come up in later times. So this is the question. Their question is, maybe did the establishment of the State of Israel change the situation? Are they still completely rejected from the Jewish people? Or maybe, now they don't say why, but I think they mean, now that we have a reestablished State of Israel, and therefore it would seem that the Judaism is on the uprise, and therefore we have more control over our fate than we once upon a time did, maybe the threat of the Karaites has so subsided that we don't have to worry about that, we can accept them as converts. I think that might be what they mean, but it's not clear in the question. So here's Rav Uziel's answer. He says, this issue has come up before lots and lots of our predecessors, lots and lots of Rabbanim, as you know, as you rabbis in Istanbul know as well. And he says, I also, once upon a time, wrote a long discussion about it. It's in Mishpatei Uziel, also in Volume 2, but we don't have a chance to look at it now. But the rabbis of Istanbul know about it, and maybe that's part of the reason why they wrote to Rav Uziel. But he says, I want you to be clear that when I wrote that, I did not mean to come to a conclusion either to allow it or to prohibit it, because as I wrote there in the introduction, Uchvar Dashu Bo Rabim, lots and lots of people had discussions about this, they've all had various opinions, Elu Va'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, and our halachic attitude is that when there's debates among great Torah scholars, everybody's right. it's not that everybody's right, right? That's all a question. There are books written about what the Gemara meant and what we mean when we say the words Elu v'Elu v'Elu Kim Chayim. There's a range of options for what it means, but it certainly means that we don't say that one opinion is absolutely right, the other opinions are absolutely wrong, because even if we think they're wrong, and that's a question of its own, it might be, some people held that obviously one has to be right and one has to be wrong, not necessarily so, others hold not that way, and our Elu v'Elu is not our topic today, so I'm not going to get into it. It's an interesting topic of its own, but I'm not getting into it. But whatever Elu v'Elu means, whether it means one side is right, but the other side should be thought of as wrong because they were doing their best to figure out what Hashem wanted of them and what the halacha is, and therefore their words have deep and great value as Divrei Elokim Chayim, or more radical views would say things like, no, they're all right in some sense of the word. Whatever that means, his point is, and this is interesting to think about because he is Rav Uziel, he's right, he born in 1880, lives to see Hakamana Medina, is a big Talmud Chacham, is writing about issues all the time, and yet he's saying issues that have been settled before, been discussed over and over again, who am I to come after them, and then say, oh, I know better. So that's a really interesting claim point to make. His point is, and I'm not saying he's always consistent about it, you could theoretically check his tshuva to check, but his point would be, whatever has been decided or discussed before, and there's no new information about it, it's not my place to decide it. I remember hearing Rabbi Meir Twersky once talk about the difference between briskers and other achronim. I mean, his example, Kevin's example was the Shagas Aryeh. He said the Shagas Aryeh, an important Torah scholar, would take debates among the Rishonim and would still think that he could come to realize that one or the other Rishon was more correct than others, meaning he would again learn all the sources, and he would say, I think I have this insight that tells me that this position is the more correct position. So that is an attitude where the end of the period of the Rishonim isn't really over, because you sort of feel like you're still part of that Beit Midrash and have the right to argue it that way. And Rabbi Meir Twersky said that in the briskers, they would say, the Rishonim can learn it, that the Rishonim all knew how to learn, which meant that you have an opinion of the Rishonim, you have to assume that it has value and validity because that Rishon came up with it, so that the job of us today is to understand each position. You can go on with that and talk about, well, from there you have to rule in one way or the other. Maybe the way you rule is by deciding what is more right or not, but that's not where it went. So that's a topic of its own. But here, that's Rav Uziel taking a position somewhat along those lines. He's saying, it's not my job now, since it's been well discussed, it's not my job to claim that I know the answer to this question. My role here is just to review the topic, point out the issues, point out the questions that come up, and I'm not ruling, I'm not doing halacha, I'm not lamasa, elaka talmida yoshev b'fnei rabotav. It's just like a student in front of his rabbis, summarizing the discussion until now. Now, it's an interesting point for him to make here, because the rabbis in Istanbul had said maybe something has changed, right? Their question was, has hakamata medina, has the establishment of Israel changed anything? He's fundamentally not going to answer that question. I think his answer by silence is, why should it have? There's no relevance of the two to each other. It's a remarkable event. It's a wonderful event. But it doesn't change anything about the status. But along the way, it's going to tell us a lot about this idea that we don't accept Karaites as converts. He says, now I'm going to tell you my opinion about your question you asked me. He says, this halacha is clear in Divrei Rabbeinu, and I'm not going to mention all of them and their reasoning. So he doesn't really tell us the reason. It will slip out in a couple of ways, because we can't decide against a matter that has been decided by all of the Jewish people. That, I think, is also an extremely important broad point about how halacha works. You have sometimes, on various issues today, you'll have some intelligent guy or woman today who will read a bunch of sources, write up a reasonable reading of those sources, and say, see, this is what we really should do. And one of the points is that if the entire Jewish people has done something else, it doesn't matter what you think the sources actually say, right? And a davar sheni kabel b'kol Yisrael, something that's been accepted by the whole Jewish people, we just do that. And the fact that we think it's incorrect, so you want to change things, that would involve maybe if you could put together a group of rabbanim or this, or you had some, it's a whole process. It's not like you can just come along and say, I think it should be different. So this is what has been accepted by all the Jewish people regarding the Karaites. From the time that this community separated themselves from the Jewish people and until today, Rav Uziel says, we've never seen that they have anybody who does a ma'asel hatir geruta shel kita zot, to allow the reconversion of people from this group to rejoin the Jewish people. We don't do such a thing. In other words, Rav Uziel is pointing out that the history of the Karaites is from the time the Karaites left the Jewish people. And let's remember, as far as we know historically, they left the Jewish people by saying, we think that you don't have to follow the Torah Shebaal Peh. We don't think you don't have to follow the oral law. The way the rabbis tell us to read Tanakh is not necessarily the way you have to read Tanakh. And then they set up a whole religion based on you can read Tanakh the ways we think you should read Tanakh. And that's a whole discussion of sort of who they are and what they did. And that's not my interest or topic today. But the rejection of the rabbinic reading of the Torah, which we think of, which Orthodox Jews, which traditional Jews think of as being both a tradition that came from Sinai, plus added onto it layers of rabbis in each generation following that tradition, adding their understandings based on their authoritative traditional readings of the Torah, all that together being the Torah Shebaal Peh, Karaites rejected it. From the time they did so, the tradition the Jewish people became, they've separated themselves from us in that way. We don't let them back. And the point is going to be, we don't let them back, even those who come. We're going to get there at the very end. We'll see that maybe an individual might be different, maybe a community might be different, but we'll talk about it in a minute. But fundamentally, the reaction was, we don't let them back, even if this particular Karaite comes to me and says, I understand that to be a faithful Jew involves accepting the oral law. I'm willing and interested in accepting the authority of the oral law. We don't accept them. So I have to say, I really never heard of this. I really never understood that this is, but it's a centuries-old tradition. He says, Kushtahu, it's true, the Kafter of Aferach, who's the 14th century of Ishtar Afarchi, wrote that the Tzdukim, which is the Gemara's name for the heretics of their time, and so the Karaites were often in rabbinic literature called Tzdukim, even though they're really separate movements, and the Tzdukim sort of disappeared. The Sadducees mostly disappeared, whereas there were Karaites, there were active Karaites. I mean, even in Istanbul, there were Karaites, it seems like, but it was still a relatively thriving community in the 14th century, it was like still really around. He says, even though today they don't add anything bad, it's not like they're adding new things that are wrong with them, and a lot of them are trying to become Jewish, and they're turning themselves into Jews, meaning they're sort of acting like Jews and becoming Jewish again. So the Kafter Ferach notes there was a case in his time that a group of Karaites converted, and that was a one-time event, and the Kafter Ferach wasn't happy about it. We'll come back to the question of groups below. But the Kafter Ferach wasn't happy about it, and he says, V'amachmir tavol av brach. It's better to be machmir even when it's a group. The reason why a group might be better is because if it's a group, it's all community rejecting their previous mistakes and coming to convert to Judaism. So that might be better. Whereas individuals, they're still fundamentally Karaites. It does nothing about the Karaite movement. And part of the battle against Karaites was that the decision not to accept their converts. But with individuals, says Rav Uziel, we see lots of cases that they did not allow them to convert at all. So there's a Maharshal in Yamshel Shlomo, which Rav Uziel seems to have known from the Sefer Yishuot Yaakov. He says it was Huvu Dvar of Sefer Yishuot Yaakov, which I think means he saw it there in that second Sefer in Yishuot Yaakov, but it might mean that he's going to tell you that this Maharshal is one that other people noticed. I'm not positive, but I think the first is right, that he noticed it. I mean, he wasn't reading the Yamshel Shlomo himself, he was reading Yishuot Yaakov, and he noticed it and remembered it from there, so he wanted to give credit to where he had first seen it. So the Maharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, writes, Shemarti Shechacham Gadol Be'eretz Yisrael, that there was a great Torah scholar in Israel who wanted to allow the Karaim, the Karaites, to convert back to Judaism. And he died within the year, meaning that the Maharshal is quoting it as evidence, as sort of supernatural evidence, as the metaphysical evidence that Hashem agrees with the general opinion that we do not accept the Karaites. This day, Chemed, who was born in Jerusalem, says, as a child in Jerusalem, there was a case, there was a great Torah scholar from the Karaites, and what he said was, I want to convert to Judaism. And there was a Rishon LeZion named Moshe Zusin. Remember that Rishon LeZion, Sephardic chief rabbis go back centuries, and he wanted them to accept him to be a Jew. He decided that Judaism was the correct thing. He wanted to convert, and he promised to donate all of his fortune, and he had a great fortune, to the upkeep of the city of Jerusalem, and they didn't accept it anyway. So the Stechem is saying that even when there was a financial sense to do so, and there doesn't seem to be any doubt about his sincerity, we don't do so. We don't let them back in. Now, I'm so struck by this because it's so at odds with the attitudes you can hear today, even from many important Torah scholars regarding other kinds of Jews. So it's just an interesting historical thing to watch that Rav Uziel is reminding us that in the 900s or 900s, I think is when the Karaites start, the late 100s or the 900s, when the 900s Karaites start, and they go for like 200, 300, 400 years, and they're really, for the 400 years, I think they were active and thriving, and they were there was almost a threat to traditional Judaism because maybe the Karaites would win out. I just looked it up on Wikipedia, sorry. According to Rav Avraham Ibn Daud, which is like one of the early Jewish history books in Sefer Kabbalah, Karat Mubin crystallized in Baghdad during the time of the Gaonim, so the 7th to the 9th centuries. Wikipedia says there are about 30 to 50,000 in the are thought to reside in the 21st century in Israel, small communities in Turkey, Europe, and the United States. According to historian Salem Whitmire Baron, one time the number of Jews filling with carrots was as much as 40% of world Jewry, and debates were not uncommon. So the golden age of carrots was 900 to 1100. So it was like a threatening movement to Judaism, and they decided they weren't accepting converts from them, and that was a decision that lasted forever, even at the cost of this money. They didn't let. And then he says, Uziel says, and I remember from hearing in my youth, he says, or maybe I even saw it in a certain sefer, I don't remember where he heard it, but he remembers that there was a group of Jewish Torah scholars, Chachmei Yisrael, and they came, and there was a Karaite who wanted to come to accept the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and they thought about it a lot, and then they decided, HaKaraim Einam Mitachim Le'olam, that's a play on words. Karaim, the word Karaite in Hebrew is spelled Kufresh Aleph, right? Karaim is Kufrei Aleph Yud Mem, because after Mikra, which means scripture. But there is a halachic principle in a completely different context, which is that when one tears Kriya, which is with an ayin, Kufrei Ayin is the root of to tear, when one tears Kriya over a relative who has passed away, over a parent, we say that you don't ever fully sew that up. You're allowed to stitch it up, but you can't fully sew it up. Whereas with other relatives, after the period of mourning, you could stitch it up completely. You could try to re-sew it to make it basically look like it's back. But for parents, we say, Hakera eino mitachet. That means to fully repair it. So they apply that halacha from Avelut, and I said it's completely irrelevant. I'm not sure. It could be that they meant there's some sort of connection there, that the split with the Karaites was such a full and complete split, it can never be repaired fully at all. And he says, and I found that there was Sefer Tzemach Tavi, there were Gedolim, and another Svarim, that there was a time when some groups of Karaites, representatives to the rabbis of Posen, it looks like in Lemberg and Lublin, and Krakow in Polish communities, and they wanted to say, you know what, let us come to you, let us have a debate. We'll have a religious debate. As I said, Wikipedia says there were religious debates in earlier times, so they wanted to have a religious debate with the Jews. And they said, and if you win, we'll accept the Torah Sheba'al Peh, we'll accept the oral law, and we'll convert, and we'll agree that you're right. And they thought about it a lot. These rabbis, they didn't know what to do. They weren't sure. And the Rav of Kremenitz got up, and he said, this thing is well. Karaim einam mitachim le'olam. This split can never be put back together. And then Acharon, he says, my last example I want to tell you is that there's a based in Jerusalem, we have a reporter based in Jerusalem, there was a Jewish man who married a Karaite woman against the advice and against the agreement of the rabbis of all time. And the rabbis of Jerusalem at the time prohibited this family from being part of the Jewish people. And they put out a cruise, they put out an announcement. Now today, sadly, who knows who would listen to what? With the agreement of the Rishon Lezion, Maran Yaakov, Shaul El Yasar, they made a decree that this man and this woman are to be separated from the Jewish community. And anybody who cares about Judaism, any, you know, cares about the sanctity of the Jewish people, the Yisraelim Kedoshim, are warned not to let their children marry with these people because they're not Jews, they're not part of the Jewish people, and you have to leave them out of the Jewish people. And any children of these people who come to convert, I'm sorry, no, not that. He says at any time, wherever they go wherever these people move, you have to announce, nope, these are not Jews, and these are not part of our community, and that's what they did in Tishrei of Tafresh Tzadi Hei. So it's not so long ago, although it can't be Tafresh Tzadi Hei, because Rav Yaakov Elazar wasn't around back then. In any case, yeah, Rav Yaakov Shaul Eliashar lived, as far as I can tell from Wikipedia, from 1817 to 1906, and Tafresh Tzadi Hei is 1935. So I think that date must be a mistake in this tshuva. Whatever it was, he was part of, he signed this agreement and this decree about this couple. So it shows that this is a topic Rav Uziel says. So this is a topic that comes up over and over again, and it's been decided the same way over and over again, that we do not accept Karaites, we do not convert Karaites, and Jews who intermarry with Karaites, we reject them from the Jewish people for violating our standards in this way. And that, therefore, he says, becomes what's called halachot kvuot. This is going above Bacha, the first halachot kvuot, which means that it's not our right and our role leharher v'lo lid vakeach ha-mekoran, not to dispute their source or their reason. They're just accepted as halachot, and you're not supposed to have any debate about them whatsoever. So we'll get to his, he's going to give a reason in a second, he's going to give an explanation, not a reason, but an explanation for why it was in a second. But I just want to pause for a minute and note some of the ramifications of this. First of all, it seems to me that the rabbis in Istanbul were trying to make a claim that maybe something significant has changed. So he doesn't really respond to that, I think because he thinks nothing significant has changed just with the established state of Israel, which is valid, but I don't think he discusses that in a way that I see here in the Tshuvot. That's one point. So that question of halachot, kivuot, and when they might change, because circumstances have changed enough that they would change, I think becomes a topic. And then the second point I would make is to note and think about, because I'm reading this tshuva and I can't help but think about Reform Jewry, who also completely rejected rabbinic tradition and rabbinic law, and yet in the 19th century, that wasn't the reaction that was had towards them. Now, it could be that that's for historical reasons, such as that the rabbis in the 19th century already realized they didn't have the strength to impose, I don't mean the strength like the physical strength, I don't even mean like the strength of will, I mean like the political power to impose this on their people, and that their choice was, they could say, they're out and they're never coming back in, but then they would like lose them all, and then they would lose them forever, and who knows what would happen. In our times as well, I think it's a continuing topic, because in our times, for sure, for all that reform still continue to reject Torah Shebe'al Peh, and now we're seeing, in the context of the Karaites, how significant that is and was to the Jewish people, you've got these complicated things today, because there are many, many reformed Jews who have contributed greatly, first of all, to the State of Israel and the building of the State of Israel, and they contributed lots of time and money and effort, and even to the thriving of Torah organizations and Torah situations. I know of, you know, I think I see like Haredi organizations where you think that the reform would be completely opposed to them, who get huge donations from people who are reformed. So whatever the decision was in the 19th century when reform first started being ascendant and was at least 40% of the Jewish community at some point, it might still be today more than 40% of the Jewish community for all I know, it got a very, very different reaction from the Rabbanim of the time, and therefore I think you can't read this tshuva without noticing the contrast. But nonetheless, as Rav Uziel says, I think this is part of the important point that he's making, is that you can't say, well, it's unfair or it's wrong that we treat them differently, we should either A, be more lenient with the Karaites, or be more stringent with the Reform. I think part of what he's pointing out, he's making, is that it's not the job of a Jew, even a great Torah scholar Jew, to rethink and relitigate all the topics have come before. You have in American law the concept of stare decisis, that things that have been decided have been decided. You don't relitigate the entire legal system all the time. You occasionally come to a topic that's been decided before and you try to relitigate it for various reasons, and maybe you win, maybe you won't, but fundamentally the principle of stare decisis is important. Here too, he's saying the decision to exclude Karaites from the Jewish people is a decision that's been made, and therefore it's not one that we have any room to change. So what's the reason that he gives, the explanation he gives for why we treat them so differently and such so much more stringently? He says that Karaites are worse than Mumari. Mumari, somebody rejects observance. He says, I'm not keeping the Torah. Even you have a Mumar Lahachis, so Mumar, let's say Avon, somebody would say something like, you know, to make a living, I can't keep Torah. That's a Mumar Lateavon. It's not that he rejects Hashem. It's not that he rejects Hashem's law. It's not that he says it's not true. He says, I'm too weak. I need to make a living, or I want to marry this woman and she won't marry me unless whatever it would be. All that, I think, would be examples of Lateavon. Mumar Lahachis, somebody says, no, I believe that I want to show that Judaism is wrong. And I want to show, you know, that's Lahachis. I want to show it. And he does it on purpose, even though he has the ability to keep the Torah, that's Lahachis. That full definition of Lahachis is a complicated one. You can have a stringent view and a lenient view of that, because the Gemaras that say that if somebody has, let's say, kosher food and non-kosher food in front of them, and they eat the non-kosher food, that's a Mumar Lahachis already, even if they would tell you they like the non-kosher food better. So it's a complicated question as to how the definition of Lahachis is, but even Lahachis, the point that is that Rav Uziel is making, even Lahachis, even the worst kind of a Mumar, he's privately sinning. He's come with crazy ideas, but he doesn't lead others to sin. He doesn't create a movement about it. And as soon as you create a movement about it, about kadzot, mishat havayata, from when it started, its point was to sunder the covenant of the Jewish people with their Father in heaven. And why do I say it that? Why does he say it that way? Because there's a Gemara in Gittin, Samach Amud Bet, which says, there's a pasuk that says, Ki al pi hadvarim ha'ela karati et ha'brit ve'Yisrael, which literally means, it's according to these words that I am making this covenant with you. But Chazal and the Gemara there say that the brit between Hashem and the Jewish people is founded upon the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law. So if the Karaites had their way, they would cause the destruction of the entire Jewish people because the whole covenant would be broken. And Chas v'Shalom, what could happen from there? So again, I read these words and I think completely about the reform. It's basically the same thing, and yet it got such a different reaction. I think it's just a fascinating to think about as we watch Rav Uziel talk about this situation. And the truth is, I have to rush a little bit because there's another tshuva coming up, which blows the whole thing out of the water in another way. We'll get to it in a second. But it's because of this element of making a movement to oppose the oral law, and therefore trying to convince others to oppose the law, and creating, and you create communities of your own, and you try to bring people in, as is true of other denominations of Judaism. In all those situations, Rav Uziel says he thinks that's why they got the reaction from Chazal that they did, that in no way can we cooperate with them, in no way can we accept their returnees, that even if individuals among them, even if there are a lot of people among them, Rabim, even if a lot of them want to come, even if many individuals want to come back, even if you found rabbis who said, no, we should accept them, we should be nice to them, it's an opportunity to heal the split in the Jewish people, we don't listen to them. And he points out that when it comes, it's because he says this has become a recognized, accepted practice of the Jewish people. And he points out there's a Gemara in Yevamot that says that if Eliyahu HaNavi came along and told us, the halacha there is halacha about Yibam, whether you can use a sandal, a certain kind of shoe, as the chalitza shoe. So the Gemara says, even though he told you could, we don't. You couldn't use it, we do, because we already use it. So that's a Gemara that's saying there are times when the practice of the Jewish people, once it's been ratified by rabbis throughout the generations, becomes the practice, and people can't come along and change it. Another reminder of this idea that I said before, the Rebbe is telling us that there's a historical working to halacha, and to the development of halacha, that you can't get around, even if you think you have good sources and good ideas, you can't always just do whatever you want. And when people try to permit it, he says it happened that you couldn't permit it, and that's like evidence that Hashem is helping us to say that it's impermissible and you can't permit it. Therefore, here too, he says you can't accept Karaites who want to come back, and this is a tear in the Jewish people that is not going to be healed up, and you should follow the psak of the Ramah. HaKaraim asur litchatein b'hem. You can't marry Karaites. They're all suffik mamzerim. That's what the Ramah gives us a reason. It's not the only reason, but it's a reason. They're all quite possibly mamzerim. Why are they all quite possibly mamzerim? Because if they're, let's say, Jews by birth from the mother all the way up, so they're Jews, but the mother married somebody she wasn't allowed to, the easiest example would be, and this comes up with Reformed Jews often, unfortunately, let's say the mother had been married before, gotten divorced without a get, the way Chazal say you have to write a get, because they don't accept, the Karaites don't accept rabbinic halacha. So then the kids from the second marriage are all mamzerim. So that's part of the reason. It could also be that they married relatives Chazal thought you weren't allowed to marry, but they're all suffic mamzerim, says the Ramah, and Eben Ezer Dalit, and therefore if they want to come and convert, we don't accept them. So the truth is the mamzerim issue would not be a reason why they couldn't convert, because you could just say, well, they're suffic mamzerim, they can't marry regular Jews. So the answer is a lot of things together. Then at the very end, he throws in, but all of that I've said now is really about our situation that you presented to me, a particular Karaite wants to convert. But of an entire community of Karaites, not a lot of people, but an entire community wanted to rejoin the Jewish people. So if it's an entire community, says Rav Uziel, now I think he means any in community. He doesn't mean all the Karaites in the world. I think he means, let's say you had all the Karaites of Istanbul got together and said, we Karaites of Istanbul announced that we were wrong, or want to announce that we were wrong and want to rejoin Judaism. There he, Rav Uziel says, on lots and lots of issues, he thinks that we would have to have a gathering of the rabbis of the world, the rabbis of the Torah world. I think he means the rabbis of Israel, but he might mean the rabbis of the entire Torah world. But he's very into that idea that there are new ideas that come along, and he thinks there are changes that can be made, but they need convocation, what I would call a Sanhedrin. Rizal mentions a bunch of times. Nobody ever, as far as I know, took him up on it, but that was his view. So I think the reason is because if it's a whole community, then they're renouncing their decision before, and they're rejoining the Jewish people. That, he thinks, would be likely possible to do. That's all the preliminary tshuva to this one, which is Shut Mishpatel Ziel Krach Bet Yoredeya Simon Samak Dalin, the next tshuva in the book, and he says it's more about this topic. And this is from the 5th of Iyar of Tav Shin Tet, on Yom HaTzmud of 1949. He had gotten a reply letter from them, and then in the reply letter he says, oh, I noticed something that you didn't mention in your previous letter, which is that this Karaite they were talking about, his mother was Jewish. So it means that in the Istanbul at the time, it's even more similar to the reform that we have today, because it was like there was mixing of the Jews and they thought of each other as Jews. Like the, for all that the Torah scholars knew that we don't accept them as converts, we think of them all as suffering moms there, we don't let them marry the Jewish people. It happened, they looked Jewish enough that regular people would interact and intermix. So here you have somebody, apparently the mother married a Karaite, and so now you have the son, and the son eventually wants to, quote, convert, unquote. But in fact, if the mother is originally Jewish, then the kid is already Jewish, and then you have a different question. He says, now I have to think about it again, and I say, it's a halacha psukah. It is established fixed Jewish law that a regular Jew who marries a mamzeret, so a mamzeret is a woman who is the product of an illicit parental relationship. The easy example would be if her mother was married to another man at the time that her father impregnated the mother, that's the product of an adulterous affair, and that is a mamzer or mamzeret. The child is mamzer or mamzeret, so that would be an easy example. So a Yisrael who married a mamzeret, and that's why, for example, why divorce is so important, because all the children from second marriages, if the divorce wasn't valid, are halakhically mamzerim or mamzerot. Or a mamzer who marries a regular Jewish woman, havlad mamzer le'olam. The child is always a mamzer, meaning whichever parent is a mamzer passes on that status to the child. So therefore, since Karaites are bechezket mamzer, we assume halachically, a chazak is an halachic presumption, we presume halachically that Karaites are mamzerim, then therefore, the child of this man who comes to, quote, convert Judaism or not, would seem to have a chazakah being a mamzer, because his mother is a regular Jewish woman, but she married Karaite. Karaites have the status halachically of mamzerim, and therefore you think that this guy is a mamzer, and therefore even whether or not he converts Judaism, maybe you tell me he doesn't have to convert Judaism, but he can't marry regular Jewish women because he's a mamzer. But on the other end of Uziel, it's not quite true, because with Karaites, it's not that they are mamzerim, they're suffolk mamzerim, they are perhaps mamzerim, which is a status that might theoretically, although I don't think we do it today, but theoretically you can imagine there coming a time when we have to say that about Reform. We'd say enough of a percentage of Reform Jews are the product of, at some point along the way, second marriages where the divorce wasn't done validly by halacha, and that's why there's such a push today to make sure that even Reformed Jews have valid gittin, and you have organizations that do such things for very valuable halachic purposes. So they're suffolk mamzerim. So, but as suffolk mamzerim, you get into the question of when you have a doubt about something halachically, what are you supposed to do about it? So that, we generally assume that when we say suffolk to lechumra, some people say that it's a doraita proposition, some people say that it's a dorabanan proposition. I think the rabbi was famous for saying it was a rabbinic rule, that by Torah law, if there's a doubt, you didn't have to worry about it. By rabbinic law, you did have to worry about it. So with suffolk mamzer, he Ruziel says it's a rabbinic thing, it's a male asu b'yuchsin. That they made that, because here the doubt isn't a usual doubt. It's like a much lower level of doubt than usual, because not all the Karaites are mamzerim. It's enough for a percentage that we worry about it, because we care about so much about lineage, so we made extra stringency about yuchsin. But it's a rabbinic principle. Now, once it's a rabbinic principle, you could say that if she marries somebody, she doesn't have to leave that marriage. When we say if she marries somebody, she doesn't have to leave that marriage, that means we're saying we don't think that the person is enough of a mamzer for us to require. Meaning those, Ruziel is saying, those issues are linked. If this Jewish woman marries a man, and halakhically we worry that he was a mamzer, so if he was really a mamzer, we say you can't stay married to him. It's usur, it's prohibited. If we said that, then the child would certainly be a mamzer. But if once she married him, we said to her, well, now that you've married him, we're not going to force you to leave him. So then, Ruziel says, so then we would think of the children out of that marriage also being kosher Jews, as being well-lineage Jews, because we've clearly decided that the father is enough of a mamzer to insist on leaving the marriage, and therefore to also not to transfer his status to his children. And that's because we think, halakhically, and I'm running over time already, and I apologize, but it's just such an interesting issue to me. It's because halakhically we think that the mothers have the ability and the right to say, I know the status of the father, and the father is kosher, and her cheskes kosher, her status of being kosher, can extend to her children as well. In addition, says Rav Uziel, with the Karaite, you can also say, when we say that all Karaites are suffering mamzerim, so suffering mamzerim means that maybe they're mamzerim. It doesn't mean the majority are mamzerim. So the majority are not mamzerim, we halachically hold. If that's true, then when one Karaite separates himself from the rest of the Karaites and marries this woman, Rav Uziel says you can apply the principle of called the parish, miruba parish. Then anybody who, anything that separates from a group, separates from the majority. There's a whole question of kavua, anything that's in its own place, that we have to treat like a 50-50 doubt, even if it's only, you know, 20% of that group that are a problem, or 10% of that group that are a problem. When they separated from it, so this man separated from his Karaite brethren and married this woman, you could say he's probably in the rove, and therefore you could say he's not even really a suffix mamzer. And so in these kinds of situations, you can also rely, we now find out, Rav Uziel points out, there's a minority that held we should accept the Karaites in the Jewish people in general, so that we not lose Jews, because they were once upon a time Jews, and we should accept them. And therefore, with this person, with this man who's coming, we should just accept him back, because his mother was Jewish. We could just tell him, your mother's Jewish, and we assume enough about you that says that you're a full, valid Jew, and you can be a Jew. So he says, but there may be other factors here that I don't know about, so Lamaisa, I'm leaving it up to you to decide it. But if he really wants to rejoin the Jewish people and to live a good Jewish life following halacha and accepting the role of the oral law and the rabbinic law in all these things, then I think that you have room to do so. And especially if you think that letting this one case is important for, because people are going to get, you know, because this man is going to be treated as a Jew anyway, so better to find rabbinic approbation for it, I think you have enough room to do so. And that is what Rav Uziel says. So this is slightly a longer tshuva than usual, but a responsible day for the 5th of Iyar, Rav Uziel on accepting Karaites and not accepting Karaites as converts to the Jewish people. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, and to David Hochhauser for putting the shiurim online. I wish you all a great day and commemoration, a proper and appropriate commemoration of those who gave their lives for the wonders that are the State of Israel today. Have a great day.